I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Today, a conversation about the future of the Democratic Party in Maryland and beyond. The Dems made big pickups in Congress, and here in Maryland, they made gains in the House of Delegates and in county executive offices. But Republican Governor Larry Hogan trounced his Democratic opponent, Ben Jealous. Jealous hoped that increased turnout and a 2-to-1 Democratic registration advantage would be enough to win, but he fell short by 12 points. My guests are two longtime activists who are vying to be the chair of the Maryland Democratic Party. The election for that job is Saturday. Today on Midday, Kathleen Matthews and Maya Rockymore Cummings talk about their vision for Democrats and their plan to retake the top job in Annapolis. Plus, a theater review by J. Wynn Russick. First, the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Today, a conversation about the future of the Democratic Party in Maryland. When Republican Governor Larry Hogan won a decisive victory over his Democratic challenger Ben Jealous in the election held earlier this month, he made history as one of the only Republicans to be reelected in this heavily Democratic state since Theodore McKeldin did it in 1954. Hogan is only the second person to do this in Maryland history. Nationally, the Democrats picked up a record-setting 40 seats in Congress. In Maryland, they picked up county executive seats in Howard and Anne Arundel counties, and they kept Baltimore County in a race that featured a close Republican ally of Governor Hogan. And Democrats strengthened their majority in the Maryland General Assembly, and they now hold sway on county councils and commissions throughout the state. But the blue wave stopped well short of the governor's mansion. This has caused a bit of soul-searching by Maryland Democrats. On Saturday, the Dems will hold a meeting of the Democratic State Central Committee, in which they will hold an election for state party chair. My guests today are the two candidates in that race. After more than two decades as an award-winning television journalist in Washington, D.C., Kathleen Matthews worked in communications for the Marriott Hotel Corporation. She ran for Congress in 2016, and she was elected interim state Democratic Party chair in May of 2017. Welcome. It's good to see you.
Thank you.
And Dr. Maya Rockymore Cummings is the founder of the consulting firm Global Policy Solutions. She has taught at American University, and she's worked for the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation, the National Urban League, and on Capitol Hill as the chief of staff for Congressman Charles Rangel of New York, as well as a staffer on the House Ways and Means Committee. She also briefly ran for governor in the primary in this last election. Dr. Cummings, good to see you as well.
Good to see you.
So, Ms. Matthews, let me start with you. How do you put the Maryland Democratic results in the context of the blue wave that clearly happened nationally? Where do you see what happened from your perch?
Well, first of all, Tom, thanks for inviting both of us in, because it's great to, I think, shine a light as to what's happening in our Democratic Party in Maryland. And I love being in a studio like this, because for 30 years I was a television news journalist. So love being back with the media anytime I have a chance.
We're on Facebook. That's as close as we get to TV right
there
now.
There we go. we saw tremendous Democratic intensity in Maryland starting after the 2016 election, when there was a real wake-up call. Maryland, of course, voted overwhelmingly for Hillary Clinton. People could not believe that Donald Trump was going to be their president. And from, you know, the day after the election, we saw this kind of rising blue wave of people who wanted to get involved. And we decided we needed to harness that. We need to organize it. And so as party chair, we launched the very first resistance and renewal canvases. These were off-year canvasses where thousands of Democrats in Maryland wanted to go out and talk to voters and find out what they were thinking, why the country could have gone for a Republican president. And that was the organizing that laid the groundwork for what I say was our first blue wave election, and that was in November of 2017, when we flipped the mayor's races in both Annapolis and also in Frederick, two red counties, counties with Republican county executives. From that early win, we were able to continue organizing through 2018. And what we were able to generate with partners, from progressive groups to labor allies to great candidates that we had running, and the Maryland Coordinated Democratic Party effort, we were able to get record turnout. So Larry Hogan won, and we were hugely disappointed that Ben Jealous didn't win that election. But our goal was to get more Democrats to vote in 2018 than we'd ever seen in a midterm election. And we did. We aimed for 1 million Democrats voting, which was way above 2014. We had 1.3 million Democrats turn out. That was 400,000 more than 4 years prior. And for Ben Jealous, it wasn't enough to lift him, but Ben Jealous got more votes than Larry Hogan did when he won in 2014. And he was a tough competitor to run against a guy who'd been in there 4 years, who had more than $10 million in his war chest, was going to be difficult for any Democrat. But what that turnout did is it got elected six county executives. So we see this blue wave spreading. We held on to the supermajority in the legislature. We elected eight delegates, often in places that had never had Democratic delegates in decades. And we also saw across rural areas of this state electing county council members, flipping county councils. So this is the beginning, I think, of what we need to invest in now, which is this rising blue tide that will make a difference in 2020 and elect a Democratic governor in 2022.
Yeah, and Maya Rockamore Cummings, when it comes to the governor's race, the governor picked up an awful lot of those Democrats that came out to vote. I mean, Mr. Jealous won first-time voters by more than 50%, but Mr. Hogan had an uptick in every single county from the last time he ran. He was up nearly 8 points in Montgomery County, nearly 10 points in the city of Baltimore, and more than 13 points in Prince George's County. Is this because Larry Hogan is just a terrific politician? He ran a great campaign. Is it the Hoganness of this thing, or was Mr. Jealous's strategy perhaps flawed to begin with?
So I think that the reason you can point fingers wherever you want to point them, but the fact of the matter is that Larry Hogan won re-election because some Democrats defected. They split their ticket. They left the Democratic Party on the up-ticket race, Ben Jealous's race, and decided to cast their lot with Larry Hogan. Now, this represents a serious problem for the Democratic Party, because it happened not just this time. It happened under Anthony Brown and, to a certain extent, under Kathleen Kennedy Townsend. And so we've got a structural problem when it comes to the Democratic Party in this state. And the structural problem is this. The Democratic Party in the state itself is becoming increasingly diverse. The primary electorate is especially diverse. And when they send their chosen primary candidate out to the general, only to see their vote nullified by other Democrats in the general election, then you have the possibility of actually splitting the coalition that has historically made up the Democratic Party in this state. And certainly it represents a strategic threat and an existential threat for our party. And so I argue that you cannot ignore the fact that Ben Jealous lost. We actually have to go deep. That's my argument. We have to go deep in this party to fix the things that need to be fixed and to actually build upon the legacy that Kathleen has shared, to get to a point where we can actually drive and win elections in the future up and down the ballot. And so that is what I'm committed to doing. That is why I'm running. I was a part of that wave of people who were absolutely appalled by the 2016 election. So I stepped forward to put my hat in the ring for the governor's race. That didn't actually work out, but I feel like I have a lot to contribute to this particular position because of my background and my history.
What about the party's culpability? I mean, again, I don't want to do too much finger pointing, but this is a postmortem to a certain extent on the election for governor. To what extent was the party culpable, and to what extent was Mr. Jealous himself culpable about unifying the party after a very vigorous primary campaign? I mean, there were six really serious candidates. There was some bad blood, you know, when the election was over. We had this little episode with Valerie Irvin, who had been Kevin Kamenetz's running mate, and not getting along very well with Mr. Jealous. The fact that Democrats not only deserted Mr. Jealous when it came to voting on voting day, but a lot of current and former Democratic office holders endorsed Mr. Hogan. Fundraising was very much more lackluster than people expected it would be. Where does the culpability lie there, and what can be done about that moving forward for your party?
Well, first of all, the Democratic Party has always been a big tent party. It is made up of coalitions of different groups, labor, minorities, women, increasingly women. And I actually think in a big tent party, you have to work on unity every day. One of the things we did in the primary election as a state party is we met with every Democratic candidate for governor. And we said the most important thing for all of us is to defeat Larry Hogan. So how do we position ourselves to be able to do that? Will you endorse the winner on day one? And they all did. Everybody did. There were skirmishes during that primary. But the day after the election, everybody had endorsed Ben Jealous. The party was working arm in arm with Ben Jealous from the day after the primary, June 27th, meeting with them and crafting the strategy that was going to work. And Ben said the best thing the party can do is organize and turn out the vote. That's your greatest capability. You have started a 24 jurisdiction strategy, an all Maryland strategy. You've been empowering the rural areas where we're losing Democratic votes. That's what your job is. Your job is to get out those million votes. Ben's job and his campaign's job was to get Ben Jealous better known among voters who didn't yet know him. And Ben was competing with governors running in Georgia, Stacey Abrams, Andrew Gillum. He was competing for resources with contested Senate races across the country. And so the kind of money that you would hope to have come in nationally into a state of Maryland did not come in. But also the timetable worked to our disadvantage because we had our primary in June. And if you're going to run a good contested primary with eight candidates, you're going to be broke the day after the election, and
which
you should
he was,
be broke.
And the Republican Governors Association stepped in. And
meanwhile, the Republican
tried
governors—
tried to define Mr. Jealous in a pretty vicious way.
That's right. And I think they believed that Ben
Jealous
and our party was a threat to losing a Republican governor's race. So they jumped in immediately. They were poised with ads before the primary, and of course Larry Hogan had no opposition to build up Larry Hogan on television. And then the day after the primary, they were positioned to attack whomever won our nomination. Meanwhile, we were getting our coordinated campaign ramped up. We had four times as many organizers in 2018 as we had 4 years earlier, 80 organizers around the state. We were partnering with our central committees, which are our local grassroots organizations. We were partnering with every campaign in addition to the Jealous campaign. And we were aiming for those 1 million votes while Ben was raising money to be able to get on television. And I think we've got some lessons on that. What is it that we can do in the future? But one of the things that makes me feel good right now and optimistic about this enduring blue tide that we can invest in is that when we elected all of those county executives across the state, we refreshed our bench for the Democratic Party. We had tremendous people who ran for governor in 2014 who are better known, people like Maya Rockamore Cummings, people like Krish Vignaraja, people like Rashern Baker. And so I think we have a tremendous broader bench, and we decimated their bench. We got rid of their candidates like Steve Shue in Anne Arundel County, who they thought might be a successor to Larry Hogan. And then we also kept that supermajority in the legislature so that Larry Hogan will have to govern democratically. You know, he's going to have to, we override his vetoes with that kind of supermajority.
Right.
We're going to get the kind of policies that are going to lift all Marylanders while we work internally, as Maya suggests. And she's got great ideas here. And it's why I encouraged her to look into the Maryland Democratic Party.
She did. She recruited me.
So,
nice move there, Matthew.
I never thought she'd run against me, but I certainly wanted her on my team.
Neither did I.
We will work together.
Yeah, I've had a number of people come in and say, if the Democrats, here are the Democrats in a state that overwhelmingly went for Hillary Clinton, nominated the guy who was working hand in glove with Bernie Sanders, that Maryland at this moment was not ready for a Bernie Sanders wing of the Democratic Party candidate. They were really ready for a Hillary Clinton wing of the Democratic Party. What can, as the party chair and as a party here in the state, what can the state do to unify these apparent two wings of the party? For lack of a better term, we'll call them centrist and progressive.
So I'm going to just back up because, Ben Jealous was arguing that if he turned out a million new voters, and I think he was arguing that in conjunction with the Maryland Democratic Party, then he would be the victor when it came to the election.
And he turned out the million votes.
More than a million. And he was
1.3 million.
1.3 million. And he was not the victor. So there's something wrong here, right? And so, yes, progressives and traditional Democrats had come out to support Ben Jealous. But let me tell you the nature of the kinds of concerns that I've heard from across the state as I've been running for this position. One, there is the issue of Larry Hogan himself. He doesn't have a great track record. He triangulated, trying to co-opt the results that the Democratic legislature actually put forward as his own. And yet there was a lot of concern that the Democratic Party was not hard-hitting in terms of calling him out on his triangulation tactics and actually pointing out the real record of Larry Hogan. As you well know, there are consequences for places like Baltimore when it comes to... go ahead.
But one woman's triangulation is another man's bipartisanship. That's how Mr. Hogan would defend it. Well, and I think that message appears to have resonated with a lot of the Democrats.
There is nothing bipartisan about a veto that has to be overridden. So the fact of the matter is that he was a very partisan first-term governor, and he's likely to be, based on what we've seen in the last few days in terms of the Republican Party sending down and asking Republicans in this state to go support Cindy Hyde Smith in the state of Mississippi, somebody who has a track record of expressing admiration for Confederate people and symbols. We've got a problem here, and that problem will continue in a second-term Larry Hogan administration. So I just want to say that. There were also complaints about, the lack of ramp up. We knew that Ben was going to come out of this primary, this contested primary, broke. That meant that the party actually had to be ready to hit the ground running the day after the primary. So there was a lot of concern that they were just ramping up the day after the primary. And so that's something to be fixed in the future. And then there are all kinds of concerns across the state about literature and door knocking. And who was able to pass, who didn't get materials for Ben Jealous, who did get materials for Ben Jealous and didn't pass them out, that kind of thing. And so there seems to be some kind of internal conflict going on within the Democratic Party itself with regards to perhaps Ben Jealous, maybe from a perspective of him being from the progressive wing of the party, maybe because of race and ethnicity. We don't know. And so we need to do that debrief. We need to dig deep and we need to go deep in order to understand it. Now, let me say this. There is, I think, an ideological split within the Democratic Party, but it's on the level of policy options. It's not on the overarching values. And so I think that the answer to that, the way you bring people together, is actually my first prong of my platform, which is actually define our values. And we do that by actually creating a party platform where we can create a consensus around where we stand. And that, I think, the process of going through that platform itself and creating it will actually bring us to a point of understanding what the overarching values that bind us together are.
And so we are at a point that we got to take a quick break, and I'll let you pick up on that point when we come back. Maya Rockamore Cummings is running against Kathleen Matthews to be the next state Democratic Party chair. They join me here in Studio A. The election, which will take place at the Democratic Central Committee meeting on Saturday in Lanham, is happening Saturday morning, but we are going to talk more about the future of the Democratic Party right here on Midday. If you'd like to join our conversation, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayWIPR, and we are streaming on the WIPR Facebook page. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, ROCA has arrived in Baltimore. It's a program aimed at gang members and young men to get them off the street and into steady employment. The founder of ROCA, who has implemented it in Boston for the last 30 years, is a woman who actually grew up here in Baltimore. Her name is Molly Baldwin, and she's going to join me to explain how the program works, why she thinks it's a good fit for Baltimore, and what it costs. So we're going to talk to Molly Baldwin about ROCA tomorrow. Plus, we'll have a musical performance that kicks it old style. I'm talking really old style, like Renaissance old. The acclaimed lutenist Ron McFarland plays for us live in Studio A. That's coming up tomorrow here on Midday. If you've just joined us today, we're talking about the future of the Democratic Party here in Maryland and beyond. Maya Rockamore Cummings and Kathleen Matthews join me. They are running against each other to be the next Maryland State Democratic Party chair in an election Saturday at a meeting of the Democratic State Central Committee of Maryland. Our phone number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. To follow me on Twitter, it's @TomHallWYPR. And we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. Kathleen Matthews, let me give you a chance to make a quick point that we had to cut you short on before the break.
So first of all, I would like to say that Maya and I are not running against each other. We're running together to try to improve our Democratic Party's capability to win elections in the future. This is really, we share the same goals. And actually, a lot of the critiques she's shared about what went wrong in Maryland in 2018 that made us have a blue wave but not a blue tsunami, because a blue tsunami would have included the governorship, are things that I have heard as well, as we are critiquing and debriefing people all over the state to figure out what can we do going forward. What is the plan for that enduring blue tide that is going to lift all boats going forward? And we worked very hard raising more money than the party's ever raised going into that general election. So we were prepared financially, but we had been asked by one of the gubernatorial campaigns, which happened to be the winner's campaign, to wait to put together the infrastructure for the coordinated campaign until after the victory. So we met with them day two and immediately got agreement.
And in retrospect, was that the wrong move? Should you have started earlier?
I think in retrospect, we want to talk about getting permission to start that earlier. But we had a good foundation because we'd been canvassing and organizing for a year. So we had a lot to build on, but you had to hire your leadership and they wanted us to wait. So I think that's something that going forward, I think the party needs to ask permission to have that infrastructure in place so that the day after we're opening offices and everything is moving forward. The second thing I think that's important to look at is, we see this intensity happening in terms of our grassroots infrastructure, our central committees, 24 central committees that are really the foundation of this party. 60% of them are new members who were elected in that June primary. So we had central committees where 6 out of 10 members were brand new and had not had the benefit of the training that we had done the previous year. So do we need to look at a different timetable for how those people come into play? Because you can't train, you can't build the airplane and fly it at the same time. It's very difficult to do. And we had to do that. So looking at a different timetable for when those central committees might be inducted and trained, because they are our grassroots. The good news is when you have 6 out of 10 new central committee members, you have all this fresh blood in the party. And that's the benefit we have going forward, is all these new people that we can train, we can create volunteer and candidate institutes, the kind of things that'll get us ready for 4 years from now, for 2022. And right now we have 22 people running for the 8 officer positions in the party in Saturday's election. We've never had that kind of interest. And I think it goes to show that there is a vitality and a relevance of the Maryland Democratic Party that hasn't existed for a long time.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of enthusiasm. But Maya Rockamore Cummings, it's also true that while the Democrats hold a clear advantage in terms of registrations, the biggest increase when it comes to political parties and registrations, according to the Maryland State Board, is people registering as independents. What does that tell you about the two-party system in general and the Democratic Party in particular?
I think that the two-party system in general has been challenged, not just in Maryland, but nationwide. I think that people see that it creates a ideological lockbox for folks where they don't have another alternative and they're frustrated by it. That being said, I do have a question of clarification. Are you saying that before the primary ended, you were coordinating with the Jealous campaign about how the coordinated campaign should run?
No, we met with every single gubernatorial candidate who was still in the race, and you had dropped out of the race by then. We met with every single one of them and their teams to say, We would like to be able to hire somebody now to run this coordinated. This is what we're looking at in terms of a voter universe that will obviously shift and evolve based on who the nominee is of our targeted voters. Do we have your permission to hire a team? Do you believe that this is the right strategy? So they were all briefed,
and
every
all
single
said
one
no.
of them. And every one of them said, yes, you can go forward. You can go forward and hire these people, accept the Jealous campaign. And we had to respect that, because if one was not willing to do that, you didn't want to hire a team and have them disagree. I think they believed that they wanted to make sure it was a team that they were comfortable with, and they were. They right. helped us select our right. coordinated director.
Of course, at the time, nobody thought Mr. Jealous was going to win that race either. I mean, at least it was close to begin, and the fact that he won by as much as he won, he beat Mr. Baker by some 10 points
or
something.
10 points.
That was, you know, that was bigger margin than
Let me talk
thought.
To that independent voter thing, though, because I believe
I'd actually
that,
like to come back to it, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So with the independent voters, I think that we did polling with the Jealous campaign that showed that the vast majority of Marylanders, Democrats and independents, believe in a certain set of goals. And that's what we ran on in every race. And that is more affordable health care, stronger public schools, good jobs at better wages, and an environment in which our state can grow and thrive. And so those were the core of what every Democrat believed in and signed on for. And I also believe those are the principles that independents believe in. So what we are working on now is, when you're an independent, I think you're making a statement about your independence, which I admire, saying I'm not going to be put into a box, as Maya says, in any particular party. But the fact is, most of those independents believe in the Democratic tenets. And so we are working now on legislation, already talking to a state senator on legislation that would allow for same-day party switching. We now have same-day voter registration, which is going to expand the general
register
electorate.
Register on the day you vote on you the can, general in the general election.
Not only in the early vote, but in the general election vote. So we will expand the electorate. We will expand the Democratic electorate by allowing same-day party switching, so that they can show up on a primary day or in the early voting for primary and say, I want to vote on the Democratic ticket. And that is, I think, going to expand our party tremendously.
Quick comment about the independents.
So the thing about independents is that, certainly, and let me get to the same-day party switching. We need to understand that the issue of people who are registering as Democrats but who are actually Republicans is actually a challenge as well. They call them dinos, Democrats in name only. And there is a significant opportunity for them to actually disrupt Democratic Party politics if they're given that leverage to come in on same day and just switch parties. So we need to be wary of that red flag. But I don't think we should leave independence on the table. And so with that, my plan actually includes an entire strategy to focus on educating and mobilizing independents, particularly those who lean Democrat. I do think that, you know, we have to have a focus on expanding the base, and that means turning out non-voters, getting them to understand that they're aligned with Democratic Party values, as well as independents who have been disaffected for whatever reason. And sometimes that reason is they feel like the Democratic Party has actually not held firm and fast to its own values, too, and they become alienated from the party in that regard. But I don't think that we should leave them on the table. And so in my plan, I actually argue that we should, you know, have a concerted effort to recruit and get them to enroll in the Democratic Party.
And they were part of the target of our Get Out the Vote.
Mm-hmm.
In our early persuasion, we really went after them.
Let's go to the phones to Lauren, who's calling from Woodbridge. Lauren, welcome to Midday.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I am one of those 35-year Democrats who went independent as a direct result of the primary of 2016. I was a Sanders advocate. I was involved with the Democratic Party. I did canvassing. And I saw what happened and how he was treated by the Democratic Party. And not only I, an entire younger generation saw it as well. And that's who your independents are. Yes, we are liberal-leaning, but a lot of those guys voted for Trump. And I truly believe the setup in Maryland as a closed primary is voter suppression. If you don't want that wave, be honest about who really should win the primary and eliminate this closed primary system. It's voter suppression, clear and simple.
All right, thanks for the comment, Lauren. The idea of open primaries, what do you think?
So first, let me get to the Bernie wing of the party. The fact of the matter is that, you know, it was alienating for progressives during the 8 years of the Obama administration to actually have to spend the entire first term of his administration fighting to protect Social Security from cuts, fighting Democrats on that issue. And so that whole long history of having progressives being stalwarts for the party's values, only to be kind of spurned by a traditionalist wing of the party, has been alienating. And we saw it come to a head during the 2016 election. So that sent some people off and out of the party, but many of them stayed. And so now we have a duty as a party to actually coalesce, and I believe that I actually am the person who can bring that part and bring the party together. I've worked with the progressive wing of the party. I worked with the traditionalists. I know where everyone stands. I've worked with the electeds. I've worked with the advocates. I know where everyone stands. I've worked on the public policies. I know the policy options in and out across the spectrum. I know where everyone stands, and I can bring the folks together because I'm in the center of it. I can drive the process to get them to the end where we create a newly reformed and revived and revigorated and unified Democratic Party to get us where we need to go in the future. Absolutely. A closed primary is actually disenfranchising. It's disenfranchising because it's only open to those who are registered Democrat and those who are registered Republicans. Everybody else does not have a say. And so the question becomes, you know, what's the best way to do this? I don't think, and I don't know yet, I think it takes study to understand if same-day party switching is the right option. You know, there might be another option in terms of allowing independents to, you know, vote on either ticket.
And there are people who do ranked voting. They're doing that in Maine. And there are a number of different
strategies.
That
is exactly right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I do think that it's worthwhile to study the options and to look at how we bring the entire electorate into our democratic process in an equitable way.
The DNC's actually been looking into this, and that process was called the Unity Commission. I had the pleasure of being a whip with Tom Perez, our DNC chair, to get the Unity Commission recommendations passed. And they are looking at a lot of these reforms. Same-day party registration is one of them. Maryland's ahead on that. Same-day party switching is another one that they have studied and believe is the right step. And that's what the Unity Commission has recommended. In terms of the Bernie wing, you know, I hear you too. I hear the woman who called in from Woodbridge. I hear what you're saying, Maya. And I knew that that was happening as part of my listening tour when I was considering running in 2017. I went to every county in the state, and I heard that all across the state, rural areas, urban areas. And so I realized that we needed to harness the energy of the Do the Most Good clubs, the Progressive Maryland clubs, the Our Revolution clubs, Jay Walkers in Montgomery County. And so we invited all of them multiple times to come and meet in our party to share their point of view. We appointed a liaison. We asked them to pick the liaison to the state party and gave her a position on our executive committee to make sure she could share what the party was doing with the progressive community out there, and vice versa, bring their ideas to us. And that will continue, and we've got to even double down. As Maya says, go deep. You know, I say double down on doing more of those things. And the listening has to continue because, you know, people more than anything want to be heard right now.
All right, let's go to Dan in Annapolis. Dan, welcome to Midday. Thanks for calling.
Hey, yeah, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to express a little concern about the Democratic Party in Maryland. I've been here 30 years now. I grew up in Ted Kennedy's district in Massachusetts, so I'm a Democrat through and through. In the first election when Anthony Brown was running, I really kind of felt like the Maryland Democratic Party told me who I had to vote for, and I didn't like that. In this particular case, there was a vigorous primary, and it worked out well, but I didn't think we had the right candidate. I don't know how to say it. I voted a straight Democratic ticket, but I did vote for Larry Hogan for governor. Vangelis's debate performance just kind of turned me off, and so I think that the Democratic Party in Maryland really has to listen to the people. You have to go out and talk to the people and give us more choices.
All right, thanks for the perspective, Dan. Maya Rockmore Cummings. When it comes to the people who did not survive the primary. I mean, you're included in that group. But people like Krish Vigneraja or Jesse Colvin, who ran in a highly Republican district in the first district against Congressman Andy Harris, or an Alec Ross or an Elizabeth Embry, even people like that, or Rashern Baker, who had a very successful run by most accounts as the county executive in Prince George's. What's their role now moving forward? Is there going to be a role for those people who did generate a fair amount of excitement during the campaign?
And you should add Ben Jealous to that list.
Yeah.
Who's going to stick around?
Not only stick around, but I fully expect them to see them in 2022 when the race opens up again. I know that some have indicated that they're interested in running again. I do think that the dynamic will likely be different in 2022. But, none of these people have stepped back. I mean, Krish, I saw out on the campaign trail helping other candidates. And so she's been very active. I know that other people have been continuing to support candidates and haven't gone underground, so to speak, after their loss. And I'm out here running for the chair of the Maryland Democratic Party. And so the fact of the matter is that we all have something to contribute. We had a deep bench in the primary, and all of these people are talented, super smart, and have a lot to contribute to our party.
Kathleen Matthews, the issue of redistricting is now front and center. There's a Supreme Court case. Brian Frosch is opposing Governor Hogan in their stance on whether or not the court ordered to redistrict the 6th district in particular, which many people think will end up redistricting everything. But one way or the other, there's going to be a census in 2020, and Governor Hogan will be the governor as the districts are redrawn for this current census. What's the Democratic Party's position about how this should be approached? Mr. Hogan has something that polls very well, where he says it should be taken out of the purview of the legislature and put into the purview of a commission. What do you think?
So I think the gerrymandering we see in Maryland and across this country, and it's much more severe in states that have Republican governors and Republican legislatures, is a frustration to a lot of people because they believe that districts should be drawn with like communities and geographic boundaries making sense, as opposed to the abstract art that we see in so many maps. But there is no reason for Maryland to disarm when Republican states are not doing that. I think there's a lot of skepticism about Larry Hogan's independent commission that is being crafted by a Republican governor with hopes of making Maryland more red. And so that's why Brian Frosch is saying, let's wait. We should wait till after that 2020 census to redraw the lines in the next year for the 2020 election, and then redraw them again for the 2022 election is going to be very disruptive. And I think that's why he's challenging this court decision. Similarly, in the legislature, the Democrats are saying, let's work together on a common sense redistricting plan of our own. And so and at the national level, you have President Barack Obama and Eric Holder, the former attorney general and former governor of Virginia, Terry McAuliffe, looking at a national plan. This is going to be very much in the news. But I think the most important thing is, in a Democratic state like Maryland with 2-to-1 voter registration, we should not disarm to a Republican governor's idea of what he would prefer that redistricting map to look like.
Mm-hmm. And Maya Rockmore Cummings, let me give you the last word because we just got about a minute left. As I mentioned, the polls show that people think the idea of an independent commission, whatever they think that might be, is a good idea. It seems bipartisan. It seems like a common sense solution, as Mr. Hogan might call it.
But it takes it out of the democratic process. So at least if you have it within the legislative process, people actually have influence over their elected officials. When you set up an independent commission where they're not answerable to anybody, that creates all kinds of problems with unintended consequences. It could be devastating to the state.
Maya Rockmore Cummings and Kathleen Matthews, they are candidates for the position of Democratic State Party Chair. The election will be held at the meeting on Saturday of the Democratic State Central Committee. It's been a delight speaking to both of you, and let's stay in touch.
Thank you for giving us this time.
By the way, we have reached out to the Maryland GOP as well. We hope to have Dirk Hare, the chair of the Maryland Republican Party, on Midday sometime soon. Coming up after a quick break, theater critic Jay Wynn Russick is here with her weekly theater review. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.